Are you watching your tone so that you don't come across like a little boy, but you come across like her husband?
You know, since we talked about that today, which Melissa was talking to me about something that she was sharing with Steve about pouring life into her children so that her children aren't coming across with that message of getting hugs as, I need you, and you're there to be my source of strength from her son and stuff, which my mother did to me, and I'm sure plenty of mothers do. And so keeping that message in mind of pouring love into my wife, I did. And I called her and I said, hey, I wanted to let you know that I'm taking care of this thing that we were talking about. And here in about an hour when we get back, I'm going to give you a call and let you know how it went. And I gave her a call and I told her that I love her. And I'm thinking in my mind of, you know, pouring the love out of the pitcher into a glass of water kind of, you know, thing. But with, of course, my wife being the glass and the pitcher of love being myself. But anyway, so, yeah, I was thinking about that. And I want to say that I came across more of being a parent to our children and being a lover of my wife, and less being a, yeah, like you said, being a teenager taking care of her children and being a needy child myself of direction from her. So I want to say I think I did. And I wish she was on here to be able to tell me, but I don't know. So.
Well, and what he's talking about was something that, Joel, you had talked about on a call where a mom was saying, how do I make sure that I don't, you know, create that mother-son issue in my own son, you know, when I hug him? And it was either you or Kathy that said, make sure that when you hug your son, you feel the love flowing out towards your son, not, you know, oh, come here, mommy needs a hug, and you're actually taking the hug from your son and receiving love from him. And I really challenged Chris on that today, that, you know, I think that he needs to do, and guys need to do that view with their wives, that, you know, you're the source of life and strength for your wife. You're giving love to her, and so if he can envision pouring out to her with every conversation, every touch, every thing he says, every hug, and not, I'm sucking, you know, sucking love from my wife because I need her. I mean, yes, a man needs to need his wife, but not in that way. You know, that's in the mother-son kind of unhealthy way, not in a, I'm giving her love and I need her because she's my, you know, my lover. It's the reverse way of, you know, oh, I need her because she's mommy and I need her approval and I need her to know what I'm doing because she's going to give me, you know, the kudos I need to get through the rest of the day. And,
right.
You know,
exactly.
So to me,
and
that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so, you know, hopefully that's, you know, you agree that that's a good way to, for men to see it, because it really was a, just a really vivid picture. The other thing I challenged him on, I said, you know, Chris, what are you getting from your wife? I said, I bet, you know, in 15 seconds, your mind can think of, you know, a whole list of things that you get from your wife. And I said, I think at this stage of the game, it needs to be nothing. You know, your wife needs to be giving you nothing but warm responses. She needs to be giving to the children. You need to be giving to her. And like I said, obviously responding warmly to you. But he needs to stop looking to his wife for anything. And I think he's looking to his wife for a lot. And I think that's, you know, that passive guy thing. It's definitely mother-son where, you know, looking to the wife to fill that mommy role of, oh, I need approval and I need acceptance. And, you know, I see it in Lorna's post. I know it, and, you know, just from what she said on the forum, her frustration. And this is, you know, this is not having any conversations with her just from what she's posted. And, you know, I'm frustrated for her because I know that that's what she's, even though that may not be his intention, that's what she's sensing from him. And, you know, to leave the children and know that, you know, he's only doing things if he's told, or reminded, or, you know, she has to call him up and, you know, say, hey, you know, did you handle this with our son, or are you handling these, you know, tasks or chores or whatever? It's really frustrating, and she needs him to step up right now when she's gone. So I'm really glad to hear that you did that, Chris, and then called her and let her know how it went. So
yeah, and the whole thing about the hugs, you know, when a boy is young, and if his mother is, you know, hurting, you know, because her husband's not meeting her needs, and so she's giving her son a hug. She's not giving him a hug. She's receiving a hug. She's pulling, like she's hugging him, but she's getting comfort from that. She's drawing from him. So what happens is that son feels that drawing from her, and this is totally normal to him. I mean, it's to this son, he is now learning because, you know, he's new in the world. So he's learning that this is a relationship, a normal relationship between a son and his mother, that when she needs comforted, she comes and gives him a hug, and he feels this energy or this comfort going out of him to her. And so, again, you know, he's 7, 8, 9 years old, 3 or 4 or 5, maybe even 10, 12, 15 years old. And again, because he's new at life, this is the only life he knows, he understands, because this is his life he's living. This is a proper son-to-mother relationship, to where the son is comforting the mother. And again, when she gives him a hug and he gives her a hug, he is comforting her. Now, what happens is he gets married. And now understand that that was not a proper relationship. That was actually an upside-down relationship, that mother was getting her needs met from her son instead of her giving the son a hug because he needed a hug. So the mother wasn't sewing into him. So this son, though, he thinks it was normal. Nobody ever said to him, look, what happened to you when you were a kid was abnormal. It was not supposed to happen that way. Your wounded, hurting mother was not supposed to come to you and get comforted by giving you a hug. So to him, again, that was a normal son-to-mother relationship. So now he gets married, and lo and behold, he's married to an adult female. And when that adult female gets her feelings hurt and she comes to him, and like she's supposed to go to her husband and get a hug. He's supposed to comfort her. But when she goes to him with that feeling of need, he's already done this once when he was a kid. See, when he was a kid, he already had an adult female come to him in need. When he was a kid, he already had a needy adult female come to him and get the hugs that she needed. So now when he's an adult man, and he's married to an adult female, lo and behold, she's an adult female, and she gets her feelings hurt, and she's needy, and she needs to get this from her husband. And guess what? There's nothing left for her. And she comes to her husband needing this comfort, needing this hug, and because he's an empty vessel, he's an empty shell that already did this for one female, and God only gives every man born on planet Earth the ability to meet the needs of one female. That's why man's only supposed to have one wife. And so he's already met the needs of one adult female. So there's nothing there. So number one, he gets really PO'd. I mean, really angry that his wife is putting this unfair expectation on him that he's going to meet her need for comfort and reassurance and love, because he does not have the ability to give it to her because it's all gone. It was given to his mother. He doesn't understand this. All he knows is he's angry. And so, you know, what is the solution? The solution is for the church to teach women, don't put your husbands under so much emotional pressure. He can't meet your needs. You have to go to God to get your needs met. Well, that doesn't work. So if the husband cannot meet his wife's need because he met his mother's need, and she can't go to God because that's not his job, you know, to meet her emotional needs, so what does that wife do? She goes to her sons. And it's not her fault. She's a victim of a husband who has nothing for her. So she goes to her sons and sucks the life out of them. And the history repeats itself, you know, years after year after year. In some cultures, it's officially set up like that in culture, like in your Middle Eastern countries. Women there know that they will not get their needs met by their husbands. That's not the husband's job to meet the wife's emotional need. She knows that when she has little boys, that they are going to meet her emotional need. And it's their official culture, and they will tell you, men over there will tell you, you know, it is not our job to love and honor our wives. We love and honor our mother. Our wives will get love and honor from their children, from our children. My boys, our boys will give their mother love and honor. And I give my mother love and honor. That's the way it works in our society. So they've made it official. In America, it just happens anyway, just because, you know, the way it happens here. So here this man is got a wife, and she's needy. And she needs him to meet her emotional needs, but he's got nothing for her. So number one, that gets him really angry. Well, if it stops there, you know, he could probably overcome that, but it goes a step further. Inside, either consciously or unconsciously, and for most guys it's conscious, it's pretty much conscious. Inside, when she's trying to get her needs met from him, it reminds him of his mother. Because remember, this was normal for him as a boy. So for him, a normal mother-son relationship is what in reality is supposed to be a husband-wife relationship, but he doesn't understand that. He thought what he grew up with was normal. So when his wife comes to him, in quotes, acting like his mother, wanting him to comfort her just like his mother needed him to comfort her, then now not only is he an empty vessel with nothing to give and he feels like it's completely unfair that she's demanding my time, my attention, my love, she's abusing me, and it feels like he's being abused because he has nothing to give her. And the more she demands, the more he resists and runs away, which makes her even more angry. So now she's yelling and screaming and throwing things, and he's feeling like he's abused. But he's not being abused. He's refusing to meet his wife's need because he has nothing to give her. Well, added on top of that, like I said, if it just stopped there, it would be one thing. But when you take it the next step where he goes, says to his wife, and he feels like this, you are trying to be my mother. You're not my mother. I refuse to be married to my mother. Quit trying to control me. Now the fuse of rage is lit. So now you don't just have a guy who's PO'd and because he has nothing to give his wife because he gave it all his mother. Now you're touching into rage. And this is where men, if they're really aggressive, they beat their wives or hit their wives. This is where men like me, that because I was a Christian, I didn't beat my wife physically, and I knew that I couldn't do that as a professing Christian, that I would beat her emotionally and mentally and verbally and spiritually, screaming at her that you have to submit to me. You know, and I'd tell her to be quiet because she'd be trying to get her needs met. She'd be trying to talk to me. And I hated the sound of her voice. And she'd be trying to talk to me, and I'd be screaming at her, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, be quiet, leave me alone, leave me alone. And then because I was spiritual, I'd start screaming, go to God, go to God, go to God, screaming at the top of my lungs because of this rage, because I already did this once. I met the needs of a female already, of my mother, and this is sick. This is disgustingly horrible and sick that you are acting like my mother, trying to get me to treat you like I treated my mother. This is sick. Get the blank away from me. And that's where the rage comes in. Now, for passive guys, this is why they quit. This is why they refuse to initiate lovemaking. And this is why they refuse to give their wives hugs, smiles, and kisses. And this is why they refuse if their wife says to them, call me after work. This is why they refuse to call her. Then that's what they call, you know, passive aggressive. They're passive. You know, you don't see this stuff going on, but they're aggressive in their resistance. I mean, they are not going to meet their wife's needs, because they already did it once for their mother. And by God, I'm not going to be married to my mother. This makes me sick. And then, of course, their wives become very aggressive because, you know, they're passive. The wives become very aggressive, which is our little joke. And then those guys say, well, my wife's abusing me. No, she's not. She is reacting out of desperation because she has an empty vessel set before her that's the only man on this planet Earth that legally, before God, is allowed to meet her emotional needs. And her only choice is either get angry and yell and scream, or go find a boyfriend to meet her needs, which if she's a Christian, she's going to try not to do that, and a lot of Christian women can't win that battle, and they end up getting a boyfriend, even though they love the Lord, you know, or they get bitter. Some women just get totally bitter, and they hate their husband, and then they end up hating all men, and they backslide from God and become card-carrying members of the National Organization of Women, you know, et cetera. And so what is the solution? How does a man get healed of this? Well, number one, he does not get healed of it by getting his wife to shut up. That's not how a man gets healed of this. A man gets healed of this by saying, God, I've got a problem. I've got nothing for my wife. And every time she asks me to meet her needs, I think she's trying to control me. I think she's trying to be my mother. So, God, number one, help me understand that I am not married to my mother. I'm married to my wife, to my girlfriend, to my lover, the woman I'm supposed to have passionate, romantic sex with, you know, every night or every other night or at the worst every few nights. That's who I'm married to, is a woman, my girlfriend. And so a man needs to say to himself over and over again, this is not my mother. She is my girlfriend, my wife. She's my lover. And he has to say that, but then also he has to ask God. And this is where the prayer comes in. God, fill me back up with what I gave away to my mother. Fill me back up, God, from the tip of my head to the soles of my feet. Fill me back up with that ability that you gave me when I was born on planet Earth to meet the needs of one adult female that was given away to my mother. Not my mother's fault, not my fault. We were both victims of a man that didn't meet her needs, and it wasn't really his fault because the same thing happened, you know, to him. His mother got her needs met from him. And so nobody's really at fault here. You know, this happens to everybody. This is just what happens in life and in bad marriages. That's why it goes down through generation after generation after generation after generation. And, you know, in the Bible, you know, calls a generational curse. People want to get real spiritually cuckoo about that, but it's simple. It's very easy to understand these things. We don't have to cast out 10,000 demons. All we have to do is understand that this man has nothing for his wife because he's an empty vessel. So the man, just like in the Bible, where the widow with the empty vessels, and they poured a little bit in, and it just, you know, took from that vessel and kept filling up a bunch of vessels. When a man understands this, he can pray, just like I did, God, fill me back up with what I need, with that substance that you gave me when I was born, I gave away to me and my mother, fill me back up so that I can meet the needs of my wife. And guess how it gets filled up? It gets filled up, guys, by forcing yourself to meet your wife's need on the spot, in the moment, no matter how much pain you're going through, no matter how much agony it's causing you, no matter how much resistance you're pressing through, no matter how much everything inside of you is screaming, run away from your wife, you force yourself to go to her and hug on her and love on her, listen to her talk, listen to her yell at you if she's yelling at you, make love to her if she wants you to make love to her, and even if she doesn't, you need to initiate it, even though everything inside of you is screaming, run, get the heck out of here, don't initiate lovemaking with her because you don't want to be making, you know, you don't want to just remind you of your mother because, you know, all that stuff. And a guy doesn't think about his wife as his mother, but that's the reason he's resisting, you know. So he's got to press through and he's got to initiate lovemaking and say, why don't I want to initiate lovemaking? It's because of that, because I gave away that ability to meet the needs of a woman when I was a kid, and God, fill me back up. And you have to force yourself to do it. And you got to force yourself and force yourself and force yourself. At the same time, you're saying, this is not my mother. This is not my daughter. You know, she is my, you know, your wife's name. You know, Kathy's not my mother. Kathy's not my daughter. Kathy is my girlfriend and my lover. You got to force yourself to do what you need to do as a man to meet the needs of your adult female. And you do that over and over and over again, no matter how much pain you're going through internally doing it. And you ask God to fill you. And you say, God, fill me up. Fill me up, fill me up, fill me up, fill me up, and God will begin to fill you back up. Every time you force yourself, faith without works is dead, and every time you force yourself to meet your wife's emotional needs, regardless of the emotional distress you are going through as a guy, then you get filled up. God fills you up a little more every single time you meet your wife's needs. You get filled up a little more, a little more, a little more, a little more. And ladies listening to me right now, you have to understand, this is why you never say to your husband, are you doing this because you want to or because Joel and Kathy told you to? Because, ladies, I'm going to give you the answer. If your man, if your husband's going to become a man of God and a quality husband, he's going to do the right thing because we told him to do it and because the Bible tells him to do it. And if you want your husband to do it because he wants to and because there's no resistance and you don't want your husband to go through the hell I'm describing to change and become a quality man, and you don't want love and hugging and kissing and smiling from him until he feels like doing it, then, ladies, you're going to have a happy marriage when hell freezes over. That's when you're going to have a happy marriage, because it doesn't work that way. And quit trying to make your man into a woman. Your husband cannot be a woman. And ladies, you want to give hugs, smiles, and kisses when you feel like it. If you want your, if you tell your husband, no, don't give me hugs, smiles, and kisses until you feel like it, then ladies, hell's going to freeze over for most of you. And the only guys that want to give their wives hugs, smiles, and kisses, like I'm talking about in the beginning, are guys whose wives have filed divorce, hate their guts, and they got a boyfriend. And those men are desperate to give their wives hugs, smiles, and kisses. Why? Because they're trying to win her back. But as soon as they get her back, guess what? As soon as they get her back and her heart opens up and she now needs her husband, guess what he's dealing with? He's dealing with the same thing. And now the very same man that was saying, please, 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 let me give you a kiss. As soon as that wife says, I need a kiss, and that comes out of her heart and he feels it, and that connects, that need in her connects up in him to that empty place, that same man is now going to be fighting like tooth and nails to give his wife those hugs, smiles, and kisses and meet her needs or help with the dishes or change a baby diaper or whatever it is that her husband, that his wife is asking him to do. Hold her hand. Be nice to me. Come home with a smile on your face. Whatever it is. And so, man, you got to do it. I don't care how much hell you're going through inside. I don't care how much you feel like you're dying, guys. You got to do what you need to do to be a great husband. And when you do it, God will then begin to refill you with the ability to do it and the enablement, and you'll begin to change. And, yes, you'll come to a place, guys, where you break through, where you want to. I don't have an ounce of that struggle anymore because I broke through. I broke through years ago. It took me three solid years to break through the final bit of that resistance way back in 1994, 95, 96, 97. The resistance was like hell on earth for me for the first 6 months, and it was it went away slow but sure, and the resistance became less and less over that three-year period. But if I had stopped anywhere during that 3 years, I never would have become a great husband. And if my wife, ladies, listen to me, if Kathy would have said to me, Joel, are you doing this because you want to or because you know I need it? And if she was going to get mad if I told her, well, I'm just doing it because I know you need it, and if she'd say to me, well, you're not doing this because you don't feel like it? Well, if I'm going to lie to her, fine. But, you know, I'm a Christian. So if Kathy would have been asking me those kind of questions and I'm going to be truthful, I'd have been saying, no, I don't want to give you a hug right now. Matter of fact, right now I feel like running out that door. Yeah? Because I was a man overcoming severe dysfunctions, and that's what every one of you women are married to. You're married to men who have to overcome severe dysfunctions. Quit asking him if he wants to. Of course he doesn't want to. I mean, in his mind, he may. Yes, I want to overcome my dysfunctions. He could mentally quote, you know, like a robot. Yes, I want to overcome my dysfunctions. You know? But to do it, he's got to go through hell, and it's got to be his own internal hell. If you sit there on the outside of him going, I'm mad at you because you don't want to go through hell, well, ladies, he's never going to be able to do it. That's why you've got to be nice, and you've got to be loving, and you've got to be warm, and you've got to give him warm kudos when he's making these efforts. Because if you don't, he ain't going to make it. I don't care how much we yell at him and tell him that he's got to do it, no matter whether your wife ever gives you any response back, you still have to do it. It ain't going to work. I wouldn't have made it if Kathy had done that to me, if she had said to me again, you know, over and over again, are you doing this because you want to or because, you know, Paul Hegstrom told you you had to? I mean, well, yeah, I'm doing it because I was told I had to. I'm doing it because I was told it would work. well, that's not right, Joel. You know, you need to be doing this. I don't want you to do it, Joel. If you don't feel like doing it, just don't do it. Well, I just said, okay, deal. Thank God. I don't have to change. But she didn't do that. She was smart. She was a genius. She was brilliant. She could teach all you ladies how to do this, too. And I don't know if I'm talking to anybody on the phone right now, maybe just the recording, but ladies, reach out to Kathy. She is a genius. She's the reason our marriage recovered. Please understand that, everybody. Kathy's the reason our marriage recovered. Joel doesn't get any credit. I would have been a derelict. I would have been a derelict, if Kathy hadn't been a genius. And if she hadn't held my feet to the fire and demanded I treated her right, and when I treated her right, she never once asked me why I was doing it. She thanked me for it. When I treated her right, she gave me the greatest sex on planet Earth. She was a genius. She knows how to do this. And I know what we could teach your husbands, and men, we teach you what you got to do. You got to go through what I went through to change. But ladies, you got to do what Kathy did. And if you think you're going to sit back and make up your own rules, it ain't going to work. Because your husbands have to go through hell to change to become a man of God. And the problem we got half a dozen husbands right now who they just refuse to make the decision to change. And they keep putting their toe in the water and they keep thinking, well, if I do just enough to make my wife, you know, think I'm trying. No, guys, we smell that a mile away. You just got to jump in and you got to do it. You just got to do it. You know, Tim and Mary, he's been putting his toe in the water for 2 years. Chris, put your toe in the water for 3 years. I believe, Chris, you're trying to jump all the way in now. But it's the problem is, and Chris, you know, I don't know, you might be able to affirm this. It's pain. And it's too much pain to change. And so I think that the guys that do that see that pain and they go, nope, I'm going to stay on the outskirts. I'm going to try to do some of the things Joel and Kathy teach, but I'm not going to step into that wall of pain that I have to go through to die to myself because I may never find myself again. And I say, thank God, men, you never want to find yourself again. I don't know Joel Davison that used to live. I don't know that guy from before 1994. I don't know who that a-hole. I don't know who that a-hole is. He's some other guy. But if I knew him today, I would call him a stupid idiot. I'd say, you are the biggest jerk on planet Earth. What the heck are you doing with this wonderful woman and these beautiful children? You don't deserve her. That guy is dead. I don't even know who he is. And that's where you got to go, Chris, and that's where every one of you guys, and Chris, I haven't been talking to you the whole time, I'm talking to everybody, I'm just throwing you in here because you crossed my mind, you know. That's what every one of you guys got to do. You have to forget about who you are, who you've been up till now. You got to become a completely new person, totally transformed, a new creature in Christ Jesus. So not only does your wife not even know who you are anymore, you don't even know who you are anymore. All you know and all your wife knows is you're a great husband. Where did this man come from? That's who we've got to become. And I stepped through it, and I made it. And I'm telling you, man, it's a fabulous place to be. It's the world's greatest life. I feel like $1 million all the time. I feel like the happiest man on planet Earth all the time. Because I broke through and I got over here. I wish we could make some kind of a movie, you know. It's like some kind of a wall that people press through, and they finally break through the wall, and they end up in this glorious world they're living in. We're telling you folks how to get there. And ladies, for your part, when your husband's pushing through that wall, get behind him and help and push and squeeze his butt as he's going through the wall. You know, don't sit there and throw stones at him and say, you don't really want to do this. Quit pressing on that wall like that. You know, you shouldn't have to be working that hard. This should be easy for you. You should want to love me. Sorry, ladies, if it was like that, every man on planet Earth would be a great husband. It's not like that. We men, the men that have to find this ministry, and you ladies find this ministry because your men are so dysfunctional, this is what they've got to go through. If they could do this because they were great guys already, they would already be there. You would have had a happy marriage already. We are trying to take the world's biggest nincompoop men, like I was, and transform us like I am, and we're trying to get all the other men to transform into the world's greatest husbands. And there's hardly any of them out there. Look at Benny Hinn. You know, look at Bill Clinton, President of the United States, getting BJs in the Oval Office. Look at Ted Haggard, pastoring thousands of people, and he's getting homosexual BJs on Friday nights. You know, I mean, come on, ladies. We're trying to turn your men into incredible men. And they've got to fight the biggest battle of their life to get there. This is the hardest thing that a man will ever do. And ladies, if he's trying, if he's really putting an effort for it, you got to be his cheerleader. You got to be like Kathy. She's an absolute genius. Don't rewrite the plan. Don't rewrite the program. Don't say, well, that was good for Kathy to give Joel lots of sex, but I ain't going to do it. Fine. You're never going to have a happy marriage. Give it up now. Just give it up. Quit trying. Quit playing games. Quit thinking you're going to be happy someday, ladies. You're not. If you're not participating fully, then forget it. And men, if you're not initiating sex on a regular basis, like almost like all the time, forget it, man. You're never going to grow up. You're never going to change. A man has to initiate lovemaking all the time on a regular basis to ever grow up and ever change. It ain't going to happen if he doesn't do it. Well, I'm out of soapbox tonight or what? This has been fun. This is a great recording, Steve and Melissa.
Hey, Joel, can I ask a question?
Sure.
I don't know if this fits in here or not, but one of the things I was talking to Chris about is the – I don't know if it's mother-son or if it's more of a Arrested Development thing, but what about when a husband looks to the wife to get his needs met like a mommy?
Yeah, it's a total – you hit it on the head, and I didn't really comment on that much. You did a great job on that. And I
is
never –
Is that a different issue than what you're talking about? Is that
it's
more
connect,
Arrested
it's,
Development?
It's connected, but it really is – it's kind of – it's connected – but different, but it's still dysfunction. It's just a different facet of the dysfunction. I never think, and I've been wondering about this lately, and I'm not, we're not real clear on it, but I never think about what I need. I never think about what I need from Kathy. A man is completely in a wrong mindset when he's thinking about what he needs. If a man walks around with a hurt feeling in his heart and he wants to go give his wife a hug to make himself feel better, he's in a completely wrong place. If a man is laying in bed, and his wife is, downstairs helping the kids or getting ready for bed, and he's laying there with this hurt in his heart, hoping that she's going to come upstairs in the mood to make love, he's in a completely wrong place. That man is on such a total wrong track. Those kind of thoughts never crossed my mind. If they ever did, I immediately said, wait a minute, Joel, what are you doing? That's a wrong track. Get off of that. Go find your wife and do something nice for her. Go see what you can do to bless her. Go give her a hug and kiss. Go help her, with the kids or whatever it may be. Or, if I felt like, a pain, like, it'd be like, no, Joel, you go and do something to be a blessing. You can't have to call her up, tell her you love her. I'd use my pain to motivate me to bless Kathy. So that's how a guy gets over that, is he can take that and use it to motivate himself to bless his wife. But I never, that I can remember in our recovery, I never worried about anything about what I needed. All I focused on was what I needed to change. And not even that, because even that's kind of narcissistic. I focused on Kathy. I focused on being a blessing to her. I focused on, the kids. And I focused on, when I got into a bad mood, getting out of it. And, listening to Kathy, Kathy going, Joel, what are you in a bad mood for right now? You need to get out of this bad mood. And, again, in our recovery, she was nice about it. Joel, you really seem like you're in a bad mood right now. And again, this is in context to most of the time I did really good. So, you need to go to your room, sit down, I'll bring you a cup of tea, sit down for half an hour, read your Bible, and then come out in a good mood, that type of thing. And she'd be real nice about it. But I never, ever sat around thinking, I need this from Kathy. At the same exact time, because remember, ladies, she was a genius at this, she was always blessing me in return for the efforts I was making. So, I've wondered about this sometimes. I thought, what would have happened if I was totally focused on listening to Kathy and not hurting her feelings and apologizing when she told me I hurt her and blessing her and being but she was she did not do, let's put in quotes, her part. She did not give me kudos. She did not give me those warm hugs back and say, Joel, I'm so proud of the effort you're making. You know, I can really tell you're working hard at changing here. Great sex. You know, what would have happened to me? Where would I have ended up at? You know, maybe I would have ended up being hyper-focused on what I'm not getting from my wife, but I never did. And again, I had probably no kudos to me, probably because Kathy participated in what the Bible teaches. As a man sows, so shall he reap. So when I say Kathy participated in what the Bible teaches, when I sowed good into Kathy, I got good back. And it was basically immediately in most cases. Yeah, sometimes if I hurt her, it would take her, you know, a couple few days or whatever. And again, I'd have to be tender, loving, and kind for those few days. But as soon as humanly possible, she was giving me back good for the good that I sowed. And if I sowed bad seeds, she would immediately let me know. I mean, she would just, you know, if I hurt her feelings, she would tell me. So I could stop it and I could apologize and you know, and bring closure and get on with our life, get on with a happy life. So probably because Kathy was so good at participating with what the Bible teaches, which again, as a man sows, so shall he reap, it never crossed my mind what, you know, in quotes, my needs were. Because again, what does a man need? A quality man, a healthy man, really only needs three things in reality if he's really becoming a great husband and he's really working hard at it. A wife who's, in general, is in a good mood. In general, she's pleasant to be around. And the sex life is wonderful and abundant. And that's really all that a quality man needs. Okay, Biz, all the other, I'll grab stuff here. Everything else that men claim they need, you know, like you get those books, like His Needs, Her Needs, and it lists all these, in quotes, what men need, is ridiculous. It's what a toddler needs type of a thing. And so, as I said, I complimented Kathy, she compliment me back. I praise Kathy, she praises me back. I pursue Kathy romantically, she pursues me romantically back. I bless Kathy, I help her, you know, with things that she needs help with, she helps me with things I need help with. So, again, because Kathy is so perfect at this, I mean, Kathy, again, was a genius. She's an amazing, amazing, amazing woman, and that's why we have a women's group, and that's why, you know, she's the author of the book, and us together. And, you know, I may verbalize a little bit more, but one final story. We're in Africa, and those that have been at the intensives have heard this. The rest of you probably never have. But we're in Africa, and I'm laying in bed with Kathy. Kathy and I are laying in bed, and Kathy fell asleep. And I just started thinking, you know, God, this is amazing. Here we are in South Africa helping hurting marriages. The books are all around the world. People in America come to intensives. They get their marriages healed. This is amazing, God. What you've done is just astounding. And I felt like somebody's – we got that noise again. Somebody's moving stuff around. I felt like God said this to me. I felt like he said, Joel, do you want to know why you and Kathy are going around the world and bringing healing to marriages and why the books are going around the world and why it's going to continue to grow and why you're going to continue doing this? It's just going to get bigger and bigger. And I thought, well, okay, God, good question. Well, God, because, you know, I got into adultery and repented and became a great husband and you know, because the repentance was so complete, the transformation was so complete, you know, that's probably why. Of course, what do y'all hear? I mean, you know, this is like narcissistic thinking here, right? You know, it's all about me. And I felt like God said, are you done now? And I said, well, yeah. He said, do you want to know why? And I felt like he repeated the question. Do you want to know why? the books are going around the world. You can cap it in South Africa. The ministry is going to continue to grow. It's going to get bigger and bigger. And you're reaching people all over the world, and you're going to continue to do so. Do you want to know why? And I said, well, okay, sure. He says, because when Kathy was a little girl being molested by her father, I stood beside her and I chose her to raise her up, to take her around the earth, to bring healing to my people. You're riding on her coattails. Wow. Everybody take that and understand that. Do you know why Paul Hegstrom got changed? Paul Hegstrom didn't get changed because he was some kind of a good guy. Paul Hegstrom doesn't deserve any credit for his transformation. Do you know that he pushed a woman down the stair steps? He was, I think, married at this time. And he had a girlfriend. And he pushes her down the stair steps and almost kills her. And that woman gave him an ultimatum. Number one, she said, I'm never going to speak to you again. And that was, at least she was smart enough to do that. She was dumb to be in an affair, of course, and a wounded woman. But she said to him, you have one of two choices. You're either going to go to court for attempted murder, and her attorney, you know, told him, you know, you're going to lose, bud. You're going to jail for years. Or you can go to this two-year program for abusive men. And because a woman, an adulterous woman at that, stood on Paul Hegstrom's toes and demanded that he go to a two-year program or go to jail, that's the only reason Paul Hegstrom got turned around. It's the only reason that Life Skills is in existence. And Life Skills is how our marriage got kicked in the right direction. And the only reason that I became a changed husband was because Kathy demanded I change. She wouldn't accept second best, even before Life Skills. During our whole bad years of our marriage, Kathy would always say, Joel, this is wrong. We're going to go for gold in our marriage. We're not going to live like this the rest of our life. At one point in time, a prophet spoke in a church we were at to a woman on the other side of the church. He pointed her out and he says, God says you're going to have a new husband. And Kathy kind of elbowed me and looked at me and she said, that word's for me. And she told me in the car, she said, Joel, either you're going to change and be a new husband or I'm going to get a different husband. That word from God was for me. And that was before we went to Life Skills. So Kathy always knew something was wrong. And she had this drive in her that we're going to have a marriage that's gold. I'm going for the gold. She used to preach in our church before I got into the adultery. And in her 10-minute ditties when I would, you know, let her do her little ditties because I was the man of God with the power of the hour and all that. And she'd get up and she'd say, go for the gold. You got to go for the gold in your life. And you got to go for the gold in your marriage. And you got to go for the gold. You got to go for the best. Don't go for second best. Don't settle for silver. Don't settle for bronze. She was preaching that to people. Even in our bad marriage, before I got into the affair, she just didn't know how to do it. We didn't know how to do it. And God put us there in Life Skills in 1994, and we got kicked in the right direction. And then again, if we had gone to Life Skills and Kathy had sat back and waited for me to change, guess what? It never would have happened. If Kathy would have sat back after Life Skills and said, okay, Joel, go for it. Change. Never, ever would have happened. She could have waited 1,000 years. The only reason I changed was because she demanded it. And she wouldn't let me stop. And she wouldn't let me mistreat her. And she wouldn't let me not treat her properly. Joel, why didn't you give me a kiss? Joel, why aren't you holding my hand? Joel, why didn't you initiate lovemaking last night? Joel, it's been 2 nights. Why haven't you initiated lovemaking? What's going on, Joel? Come on. You know, we're married. We're supposed to be holding hands. We're supposed to be hugging. We're supposed to be talking. We're supposed to be going on dates. We're supposed to be making love. Kathy taught me everything that I know. None of this is I get the credit for. It's all, I don't get a credit. There's no credit to me on anything. Some guy wrote a thing on our book. What is it? A critique of our book on Amazon.com. And he thought he was giving us a bad review. And he wasn't. He was just saying the truth. He said, somebody's making that noise again. We need somebody to quit making that noise on their phone. Mute your phone or something. Whoever keeps making all those noises. The critique was this. It was, Joel didn't do anything to become a great husband. The only reason they have a great marriage is because Kathy Davison is an incredible woman. And he thought he was critiquing her in a book like a bad review. That wasn't a bad review. It was the truth. Our recovery is because Kathy refused to allow me to be a bad husband. She demanded I become a good husband. Life Skills gave her the tools and the permission. There's that noise again. Somebody's got to figure out who you are. Life Skills gave her permission to speak, told me I had to listen, and that was the beginning of our journey. And Kathy taught me how to be a great husband step by step by step. Told me when I hurt her feelings, told me when I forgot to give her a kiss, told me when I forgot to initiate lovemaking, told me when I forgot to give her a hug. And yes, after a while, I started doing that stuff on my own. But, you know, and I did it on my own some in the beginning, too. I mean, I did. So I'd give her hugs and kisses, initiate lovemaking. But when I would falter, when I would not give her a hug or not hold her hand in public or not hold her hand, you know, or not put my arm around her in church, she'd say, hey, what are you doing? Put your arm around me. We're here in church. Act like you like me. And so she taught me how to be a great husband. And that's called being a helpmate. And again, we understand, ladies, the only way you can do that is if your husband will listen to you, and that's our job. We say that, the intensive. We say, look, the purpose of our books, the purpose of our DVDs, the purpose of our intensive is to get your husband to listen to you. And ladies, if you'll be like Kathy and have the same heart she had, and speak up and quit asking your husband to read your mind and quit thinking he ought to know how to treat you, because that's like, you know, spitting up in the air and it falls on your face and you're mad it falls on your face. You know, if you'll teach your husband how to be a great husband, and if he'll listen and do what you're teaching him how to do and make the changes you're asking him, then you're going to have an outrageously happy marriage. And ladies, if you get a little bit off track, Kathy will straighten you out. And are you all willing to be straightened out? And every lady in the intensives always says, yes, we're willing. And then again, we get Kathy calling somebody today and they won't even answer their phone and won't return her call. You know, sat in our intensive and said, yes, if I as a wife am messed up, Kathy has every right to tell me I'm messed up, but I'm not going to answer the phone so she can tell me. And don't be that way, ladies. And I'm trusting that young lady's going to turn around. We loved her. We believe she has a sweet spirit. We believe she wants it. She's just in some kind of bondage in her brain of the enemy and needs to get rescued. And hopefully Kathy's going to be able to be successful in that. And we're going to get a bunch of ladies to call her if she won't return Kathy's calls. And bombard her phone. Because they got little kids and they're too nice of people to let them go down the pot because the wife decided she's not going to participate in a marriage recovery. So, you know, men, listen to your wives. Ladies, teach your husbands. And listen to Kathy and learn from Kathy and do it the way Kathy did. God chose her, and he made her a genius at this. She's smarter than any lady listening on this call right now. So if there's some lady listening on this phone and you're thinking, well, you know, Kathy gave Joel lots of sex, but I don't think I want to do that. Ladies, stop it. You're not as smart as Kathy. She's a genius. She's the author of the books. She's the co-founder of the ministry. She knows what she's talking about. Let her teach you. If you have a different opinion than Kathy about how to have a great marriage, you're wrong. She's right. Please understand that. Just the same as your husband has to swallow and accept that if he has a different opinion about how to be happily married than you have or we have, he's wrong and you're right and we're right. You say, well, Joel, what if I'm saying something different than you're saying to my husband? Then you're wrong, ladies. Change. Because we're getting you to where we are, which is an outrageously happy marriage. And there's no reason we get mad at the enemy of your souls, the enemy of your marriage, that gets you stuck and hung up in things, men and women, hung up in all these places in your head where you just hinder your progress. Don't hinder your progress. Let's get there. Like, wow. We wrote these books to help people get happy marriages, not to, you know, spend 10 years of, you know, guys saying, well, I'm going to put my toe in, and, you know, or ladies going, he's got to be absolutely perfect before I have sex with him or something, or give him a kiss or a hug or tell him he's great. Like, no, just as a man sows, so shall he reap. These are simple principles, folks. They're right in the Bible. They are so simple. Husbands, lay your life down for your wife. Agape love. Ladies, respond with slanderous love. That means be friendly and nice and warm when he's agape loving you. And as a man sows, so shall he reap. So ladies, don't stop the reaping process. If he treats you bad, give him bad. If he treats you great, give him great. If he treats you great, don't sit back and go, oh, yeah, well, yeah, he treated me good today, but, you know, that doesn't count because he's treated me bad for a whole week. No, it counts. As a man sows, so shall he reap. If you didn't give him bad back for that week, it's your fault, ladies. If he treated you bad for a week and you didn't give him crap, you didn't get in his face and demand that he treat you right, that's your fault, ladies. So if that does not give you the right to then, when he finally gets his head on straight and treats you right, that does not give you the right, ladies, to sit back and go, well, fine, he treated me good for a day, but I'm not going to be nice to him. He treated me bad for a week. He shouldn't have gotten away with it. If your husband treats you bad tomorrow, ladies, get on tomorrow night's phone call. You tell Joshua and Kimberly what he did and let them deal with him. Don't let your husbands treat you bad for a day. Don't let him treat you bad for 2 days. Don't let him treat you bad for a week. You've got a whole ministry here to help you hold your husband accountable. Let us hold him accountable. Let us help you in this. You're not defenseless anymore. You're not one little wife against the big bad bully anymore. You got, 200 people ready to stand in your defense, ladies, and hold your husband accountable to treat you right. You don't have to cower in the corner anymore. You don't have to pray and ask God to speak to your husband's heart. Just, you got 200 people that'll speak to his heart. All right? I hope our heart's coming through. We just want everybody to be happy. We want everybody to get the breakthrough. It's a wonderful place. We're like living in wonderful land. And when we lost our daughter a year and a half ago, folks, and we're still living in a wonderful place. And we're happy every day, even in the face of the worst possible trauma that a family could go through. And our other three children are happy and healthy and emotionally sound, and life is glorious and fabulous and wonderful. And if Joel and Kathy can do it after everything that we've been through the years of bad marriage and the adultery and the yelling and screaming and the physical fighting and everything we went through, and then losing Shekinah, 13 years into a great marriage, 14 years into a good marriage, or 13 years into a great marriage, then you can do it, folks, with whatever you're facing, whatever your situations are. And I think that's the end of the monologue for tonight again, Steve.
Hey, Joel.
Yes.
Hey, it's Roddy and Laura from Connecticut. How you doing, man?
Great. Welcome on the phone call. Haven't talked to you guys in a couple months.
Yeah.
Nice to hear you.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I just wanted to say, speaking for myself, that I think this is probably the best talk I've ever heard you give. And really, it filled me up and gave me a lot of keen insights. And I'm absolutely gonna implant them in my DNA. We've been doing pretty well, but I definitely wanted to say that this is some of the things I heard was like, okay, I can get another step or two up here and keep on improving.
Awesome.
But we're listening and we got a heck of a lot out of it. Laura, you want to?
That's awesome.
Yeah, we just wanted to say hey, and we have been doing been on a really good streak for a few months, or since the last time we talked
awesome.
To you. We've been
doing that's great news. It's wonderful.
Yeah, and we agree with everything that you just said. You're absolutely right, and you just great job.
Awesome. It means a lot. We're really glad you guys were on tonight's call. Just happened to pick tonight, and there it was. That's great.
Yeah.
That is excellent. Well, I couldn't think of anybody's voice as I'd like to have heard more speak up right then than you guys. That is great.
Okay.
That is awesome.
Keep it up. You did a great job.
Amen. Well, thank you. Well, you guys, too, congratulations on a few months of being on a good roll, and that is absolutely wonderful. And you guys, when you came to your intensive, you were not in a good place then, were you?
No, we were not at all. And it was actually 2 years ago this month.
Almost a week.
Wow.
Yes, it was two years ago this month, almost exactly
wow.
now.
Oh, that is so cool. Yeah, you guys were probably as close to, you'd be definitely emotionally divorced, but probably as close to actual physically ended up divorced as anybody that came to any of her intensives. Is my memory right about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we weren't necessarily, we weren't separated, and we weren't like, okay, we're both getting divorced this minute, but I think there was no way, in my mind, I knew we were going to be, ultimately,
right.
Especially when the children left, our daughter left for college almost 2 years ago, our son's graduating, you know, in a month or two, and he's leaving, and I knew at that point when they left that there just wasn't going to be, you know, we just weren't going to make it. And that was what I said to Kathy when I called her over 2 years ago to think about coming. I said, I just, you know, I don't want to be one of those couples that's married for 20 years. And, you know, then they're divorced and you always go, how can that happen? And I said, I don't want that to be us. And she said, you know, that it does not have to be at all, and you can have a great plan after your kids leave. And, of course, we still have two kids at home, two little kids, but there's a big break in between the two and then the younger two. And I just didn't think we were going to make it through. But, you know, it's been very hard, but, you know, everything that you say really does work. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, we are not at all thinking of getting divorced, so it's totally off the radar.
And say that last sentence again.
We're not at all thinking of getting divorced, and it's totally off the radar.
Oh, exactly. I know. It's wonderful, and that's what I meant. Like the feeling that we got from you guys at the intensive was, you know, wow, this couple is definitely going to end up divorced if there's not a miracle here. That is awesome. We are so thrilled. I'm so thrilled about that. That's wonderful. And you guys, you know, we can always use another.